Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season. And with the best bracket contest out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round night up to the national championship, you get access to most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile device, and even track the bracket on real time all the way to the tournament. Head to BetOnline today and get in all the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the week one of the Tiger Minor League Report podcast here at TigersMLReport.com. I am Rohan Gilman. It's Chris Brown, and Brandon Day of Bless You Boys will be joining us here momentarily. And we're going to be talking basically, we'll be breaking down the rosters a little bit, talk about the first weekend of baseball too. You tuned in from earlier. We did a nice tribute to our former colleague, John Kloss, who tragically passed away. And we did a little bit of, we talked about him a little bit on Friday as well. But we want to go to Motor City Metrics podcast, and we did a nice tribute to him. So give it a cap to a great guy, great person. And
Great guy, talented, really talented kid in a lot of ways. And it was an honor to know him, and he's going to be missed. And like you said, we could probably eulogize him every show for the rest of the year. But, I guess onward, we'll do our best. We won't forget John, obviously, but we're going to do our best to kind of continue what we were doing and what he helped us grow.
Yeah. And speaking of that, the Tigers, we were a little late because the Tigers won in extra innings 5-0. Carson Kelly with the grand salami as he continues to be a hit, if you will. And it was one of those things that he's been talking about in camp. And Brandon Day, hello, Brandon.
Hey, boys, how we doing?
Doing good. Just talking about the Carson Kelly hype that was there during the spring training, that was just because like those two throughout spring training, he was hitting the ball really hard. He was healthy, and it showed. And on that pitch,
the wrist is better, apparently. Yeah.
And speaking of wrists, though, unfortunately, Josh Young fractured his.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, that just came up on the Twitter timeline. So three-run bomb. Thank you. Sorry, OBK. Yeah, three-run bomb. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I said that right before Javi came to bed. I was like, it's grand salami time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping for a grand salami from Javi, but, I was just hungry.
The sack fly is good.
The sack fly was good, and he didn't strike out. I was going to say, and he didn't embarrass himself too much, but they're now 4-0, but the offense was lacking. But also at the same time, it was kind of a little lacking in Toledo too, and that we'll get to that as well, as the Mudhens open up a series starting tomorrow in Iowa, and the rest of the minor league schedule gets going on Friday with Lakeland starting the season at Dunedin. Erie will start the season at Harrisburg, and West Michigan starts the season at Lake County. No. I feel like that's all I'm wrong about that West Michigan schedule.
It is at Lake County. Yeah,
it is Lake County. Okay, Lake County, who, by the way, still does not have streaming.
No, they do. They do. They added it last year. Okay. Yeah, I remember I was tweeting out about we would show you stuff because they don't have streaming, and then Dan Hasty messaged me like, "What are you talking about? It's the streaming there." I'm like, "Oh, all right." That's where Brady Allen started hitting bombs to the opposite field last year in Lake County.
Oh yeah,
yeah. So it's kind of the prelude right now. We went down to Toledo opening day again this year, and it was a surreal day in many ways. But we got to see Matt Manning pitch, which is I'm sure not what he wanted, but he went out there and did really well. Honestly, it was one mistake that went 450 feet, but other than that, it was kind of a continuation of what he did in spring training. He was mixing in the fastball and the sweeper, getting swings and misses with both of those, and then adding in a couple other pitches. Didn't get any swings and misses, I don't think. He maybe got one with the slider, and then none with his split change or whatever, but you know, it looked like, at least we were speculating early on that that maybe they were having him work on the sweeper and slider because he really seemed to be throwing those a lot early. But yeah, it was good to see him go down there. Like, this is what we kind of expected, but what he needs to do, right? He needs to go down there and shove. And at some point, he'll get another chance. You know, we just
and he does really need to learn to pitch a couple different ways. And like you say, like throw the slider, throw the curveball. You know, figure it out. If you get hit hard for a while, that's fine. We always, you know, we go back to the fastball if you want to. And the fastball's, you know, looked a lot better this spring than it has in certain times. So I mean, the slider has as well. You know, there's quite a bit to like in what he did this spring. It's just a freakish of no injuries. Nobody even wants to talk about it. You know, it's just a really odd scenario where you're like, no one got hurt and you're just like, oh, we've got too much pitching. That's weird. So we'll see how long that holds up. But Toledo is, you know, obviously got a pretty stacked rotation of their own, as does Erie. So plenty of help coming. We
need it. And I was just going to say that the biggest thing, and we'll get to Erie's roster in a second, but the biggest takeaway I had too was the fact that Toledo this year, bullpen wise too, has, it's not just a hodgepodge of whomever, veteran wise too. I mean, we did, Saturday was an example of seeing Wilmer Flores, who AJ Hinch has mentioned that's going to be throwing at least three innings. But again, this is another, we saw this last year in Erie. He kind of bulldogged his way through that. He didn't strike out anybody, and it looked like he had a hard time commanding his slider. I mean, or it just, he snapped off a few curveballs. I was talking to Colin, who was our intern out there, who was talking to me during the game. He sat about 96, 97, he sat, but wasn't really, he got the two strikes pretty good, pretty effectively, but it was just, he had a hard time finishing hitters. And that's where he ran into trouble. And Herter, who made his first Triple A appearance, wasn't bad. Maybe it was the nerves. Maybe it was just like that. But it was one of those starts too, where I'm not really. Again, it's a first start. I'm not concerned about it. But the defense behind him all weekend. There was something about I thought the outfield, especially Friday, Chris. I mean, in Brandon, I'm not sure if you saw any of the game Friday, but a lot of times the outfield was an adventure. It was just it was one of those things where you think it was like a normal fly ball to the left or a fly ball to center. And I don't know if this, maybe it's the sun. I don't know what the hell is going on, but it was an adventure, just to say the least.
Yeah, and of course Herter comes out and, you know, like walks a guy, hits a guy. You know, we just don't see that much of that out of him. So maybe that's just a little bit of early season, you know, nerves or just not being real sharp. But yeah, I mean, it was a very un-Brant Herter looking performance.
It reminded me,
you know, the middle of the outing, he settled in. He looked like he was going to do his thing for a while, and then, you know, kind of lost the plot again. So and again, like you guys say with Flores, he's probably working on something. So especially this early in the year, so maybe that's the cause for him being a little bit wilder than normal.
Yeah, with Herter, it reminded me of when he first came up to Double-A Erie in 2022. He had a couple outings there. It's I remember it distinctly, where he would just have issues with like his landing spot. He'd be always looking down at his landing spot, and like, I don't know, he's normally a guy with pretty good command. He works the edges and stuff, and then sometimes it just completely leaves him. And yeah, that's what happened. Like you said, a couple wild pitches, I think he hit a guy or at least one guy, and just not normally the type of pitcher he is. He was giving up hard contact. Yeah. I think he got one swing and miss the entire outing.
Yeah. I mean, he's a big, tall guy too. He's got that, you know, that issue like we talked about with Wentz, although Herter's controlled it a lot better over the last year or two. But, you know, really long-limbed, long-legged guys who are 6'6", tricky. So trickier than for other guys anyway.
And both his velocity and Flores' velocity were down slightly from what we saw in spring training. And maybe that's just, you know, the weather. It wasn't particularly warm on Sunday in Toledo, although Montero seemed to be just fine with his velocity on Saturday.
Yeah, Manning was down like just a little bit from spring. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but yeah. Yeah, but you're right. Montero was pumping 97 pretty much whenever he wanted to. Looked really good.
Montero, I'm so excited for Montero this year. I really think he's going to be a difference maker, and he was straight dealing. I didn't think he didn't look rusty at all. He came out there and was hitting the strike zone very effectively. And the biggest thing, and you guys can attest to this last year, a lot of times he got in these long innings where he pitched a lot. He was trying to feel his way out of situations.
Yeah.
But that slider command was chef's kiss.
Yeah. And he's got both breaking balls kind of working with a little bit more horizontal now, both of them, you know, a little bit more slurvish and sweeping. Whereas in the past, sometimes it would be, you know, one or the other or really inconsistent. It's starting to feel like he's got those two separated, you know, starting to command them more consistently. And, you know, he's got a pretty good changeup now too. I was really impressed with him last year. I've kind of been a big booster of Keiter for a long time. And, you know, 2022, I was kind of starting to like, okay, I can kind of see the reliever angle. And then, you know, just a lot came together. And whether that was you know, getting his development plan in Spanish, or just, you know, refining some things that he'd been working on all along and just came together for him. It looked a lot better. You know, he still has his times where he's, you know, he's outside the zone and, you know, a little too careful maybe sometimes, or isn't comfortable throwing his secondary pitches in a certain situation and tries to power his way out of, which he's not really that capable of. He can, but you know, you don't really want to see him just leaning back and pumping 97, 98 at guys at that level too much, especially in a jam. So yeah, it's just learning to pitch a little bit more of him and being a little bit more consistent. And yeah, that was a pretty darn good start, especially compared to a lot of the other guys. So yeah.
All right. So Paul learned some of that Blanco through no hitter versus Toronto.
Ronel Blanco.
Oh wow. That's
another Houston starter that cost him 100?
He's 30 and he's got 25 career games in the big leagues. I honestly don't think I've ever heard of him.
I've just heard the name. I know nothing about him.
But yeah,
to see some weird stuff, you know, I don't want to say the Tigers are going to just turn it on when it's hot, but you know, you kind of see this sometimes early in the year. So
yeah, it's you know, I was thinking that we're going to get a fourth straight one run game, and then they unfortunately had a couple big hits there, and it's like a double edged sword with the Tigers right now. We're a little bit worried about the offense, but it's hard not to like the pitching right now. Yeah. Aside from, you know, Maeda had a rough outing, but and you know, Flaherty wasn't commanding the ball terribly well, but the results are results. So
yep.
Bank those four wins.
Yeah, there's a
take advantage. Also, from not great teams early in.
I mean, what the Braves were blowing out the White Sox earlier was like 9-0 earlier, something. Yeah,
they won 9-0, and there was the clip of the White Sox came back on the field without a first base coach, and they were like, they were yelling like the game was paused because they didn't have anybody. Yeah, it was the White Sox.
Pedro Grifol just yelling, "Ah, do what you want, you bums."
Basically. But, you know, we talked a lot about the Toledo pitching because it was, you know, the first two games were pretty good. Offense down there, I think, Rod, you touched on it, wasn't particularly, you know, explosive, but they did pick up a couple of early wins.
Yeah, and that's where I think the biggest takeaway that we have is that Wenzel Perez is still a damn good hitter. And that first hit he had on Friday, it was the second one where he kind of golfed it and just barreled it. And
put that was the triple.
That was triple. Triple, double, and then he had another triple, I think, Saturday he had a triple. Yep. Yeah, he had another triple Saturday.
Right-handed,
and he played right field for the first time. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris. I don't think he ever played right field in Erie, right? He was in center field mainly and left.
I thought he may have played right in Toledo last year. I remember we thought it might have been center, I don't know. I remember he has a good arm, right? Like he's one of he's a confounding player because the physical tools are all there, and yet, you know, can't make the throw from second base to first base to save his life.
Physically, he looked like a shortstop. Like if you just saw all the tools individually. Never gone that well. But I mean, you know, ever since he kind of broke out, he's been swinging a lot better bat and showing that power. And that one he golfed out there, you know, that's the kind of thing where in the past he would have just hit a weak chopper. He was able to, you know, really get down and leverage something there and still smoke it to the wall. So, and he can run. So you gotta like the tools he guys here, especially as, you know, what the Tigers really need is like a star. Like they need one more like kick-ass position player, preferably at shortstop. so yeah, you know, like if you're looking at the Toledo Mudheads position players as like a supporting cast, you know, Wenzel probably will have a role to play. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him at some point this year.
Yeah, especially if there's, you always look at the outfield as a concern with Riley Green. I mean, there was that Riley Green made a play on Friday. I think it was opening day where he was diving left. I'm like, no.
And he's like holding his left arm up, like, look, I didn't break it. Yeah, it's fine.
Oh man, that was scary.
Yeah. But you gotta love that he just went back out there and dove right away, though. You know, it's just, you know, kind of one of those ball will find you kind of situations. You know, he's just such an odd player. You know, like Riley Green, it's like he runs on his toes. You know, he's got like such a weirdly flexible lower half that shows up in his hitting and his gait and everything. He's just kind of odd that way. You know, and he's always had, you know, average speed ish, somewhere maybe a little bit above at times. But he's just kind of a funky bodied cat. If that's a phrase that I can coin here, he's just kind of odd. So
yeah, I remember when we first saw him at West Michigan, where he was kind of like, remember how he's creeping up?
But you know, you watch him on the bases, and he looks like he's hurt. You know,
like I remember in West Michigan, he's kind of like creeping around, like on his balls of his feet. It was really weird in center field when he was skinnier.
Yeah, I think I used to always compare him to, like, he runs like an old cowboy.
He does. I know. He's got those wide open hips, you know, like Scooble's got. But
but
Scooble's got a lot more cake in the pantry. But you know,
we saw you know, Malloy, I think, had a couple hits and a double, and Young ended up with a double, and Dingler hit a home run, which was nice to see. His only other home run at AAA, I think, came off a catcher last year, so it's nice to see him get his first real AAA home run. But yeah, the offense, it's just like Detroit, right? It needs to heat up a little bit. Sunday was not a good game. for any aspect. So, but you know, they usually hit really well out in Iowa. So hopefully that'll help wake them up.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, so tomorrow's starters, Chris, you had the starters, right? I can remember.
It's Brian Sammons, who is a veteran lefty, I believe. And then Wednesday appears to be a bullpen day of some sort. And then Thursday it's Manning again. And then Montero, Herder. And I assume Sammons gets the double duty this week. I don't know what they're like, if they're really rolling with a 4-man rotation in Toledo right now, I'm not entirely sure how that's going to rectify itself.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about what you guys thought about Flores. Cause I mean, yeah, he you know, he looked like he was supposed to go like 3 or 4 innings, but I couldn't tell. I didn't look back to see when he did an outing. And otherwise he would have been like scheduled for Monday technically. And it just wasn't going to work that way. So they just kind of got him in there. Or do you think they're actually trying to get him comfortable being more flexible in his role? I assume it was just the former, but I don't know.
No, yeah, Raj, didn't you hear? I don't know. Where did you hear something about like they were going to get him working 3-inning stints?
AJ Hinch mentioned it. Yeah. That Hinch was talking about using him in 3-inning spurts like that. So, and it was the case too where he pitched 2 1/3 innings, I think, the other day on Saturday. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. And yeah, that's where it kind of it makes sense. And I think that I think they're not entirely convinced that maybe I thought they would use him as a reliever or like a straight up closer. That's what I thought that was going to happen. But then I thought about, well, I mean, they also have the likes of Devin Sweet back there who can close. Toledo's got a couple guys that can, I mean, Trey, actually, you know what, this year for new.
I have the pronunciation guide.
Hell yeah. I have the pronunciation.
Oh, yeah.
Here. So, you know, if they're going to bring in Or I still can't even do it. You know, I have the damn pronunciation guide and I can't effing do it.
It is wing, though, right? It's like Wing-enter.
Wing-enter. Okay. So, yeah. And then the, I love to see when Pacheco will actually make an appearance, because if he can come out there, but the back end of the bullpen is just, you know, even guys like was mentioning, even was Mason Engler. I mean, Engler can even close too if you want him to, because he's got that kind of funky delivery that could throw guys off. Although it was weird to see Blake Holub pitching for Nashville.
Oh yeah,
and we saw a former friend of the show, not really, but Nolan Blackwood out there as well.
Oh, he was out there.
It was out Saturday.
I thought he was out of baseball.
I mean, they've got Brisky. They've got Drew Anderson. Got options.
Yeah, Brisky was hitting 97, pretty good.
Yeah,
97. Yeah, he was pumping in there. Although Chris, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, he was having a hard time locating his slider, right?
Yeah, he was. Well, it was his slider, and he was having a hard time locating in general. In that he worked 2 innings. I was kind of surprised they had him work the 8, and it was, I think he loaded the bases.
Yeah.
With maybe 1 out and got out of it. They had Nashville left a lot of guys on base in that game. That Engler had the same sort of issue where he loaded the bases, and then I think with nobody out, and he was managed to wriggle out of it.
I think he struck out the side almost after that, right? Or like two of them in a pop-up.
Two strikeouts in like a weak pop-out to, I think it was, and maybe their best hitter. But yeah, Brisky, you know, that's what I think Hinch talked about earlier about, like, you know, relievers 9, 10, and 11. They're going to use them too. And that's, yeah, it's Brisky right now. And I think the slider is still going to be his distant third pitch, but he was using it, you know, spotting it in there every now and then. And then the changeup fastball combination is still pretty damn good.
Yeah, it'd be nice to think the slider would get way better, but it just doesn't seem like it's in the cards. Yeah,
there's a, I don't know, it's, I love to see when hopefully Brisky becomes kind of like that, they decide to use him more as late inning option versus like a 6th or 7th inning option, because I think he's better suited for that, because his demeanor out there, but we'll see how the Tigers use him. So let's go to Erie, and so Wednesday, so by the way, Wednesday is the, Wednesday's Erie's media day, I'll be out there for that, and West Michigan's media day is going on at 2 o'clock, and so we'll be splitting duties, so Jerry will be out there on Wednesday getting some press. By the way, props, really want to give a shout out to Lynn over the West Michigan Whitecaps, who's now responsible for media, really has done a really fantastic job of taking care of her media passes and all that. And we're going to have Zeke Jennings write an article that's going to be coming out tomorrow morning previewing the Whitecaps. But the Erie Seawolves, you're defending Eastern League champions, and they come in with a rotation that's veteran laced, I guess, if you want to say it, but also has got probably the best arm in the system in Jackson Job. And Weekill Hernandez will make his double A debut. He'll be part of that rotation along with Ty Madden, Lyle Lockhart Jr., and Troy Melton, who also may make his double A debut. And Let's talk about this rotation, gentlemen. The biggest thing, I mean, I know Ty Madden, people thought he might end up in Toledo because of roster crunch. That's why he's in Erie. And that, I don't think that is a demotion either. I think he this gives him really an opportunity to carve up, continue to carve up some more hitters, to get some more attempts against lefties where we saw him struggle a little bit last year. But I thought he was getting better. But I did a report on Lyle Lockhart Jr., who was telling me that he essentially is adding a sinker to his pitch mix. And so he's been working really hard this offseason. So he learned a splitter when he got here. And he is a guy who I'm intrigued with, only because he could be a swingman. And like if you really think about it, lefty wise, he could be, I mean, I know Brant Hurdler is probably ahead of him in the curve in that department, but he's a guy who could be more used as a bullpen swing guy than a starter. But either way, I think this rotation is going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, they're loaded. You know, they're not loaded with lefties. So, yeah, Lockhart's going to get plenty of chances if he's, you know, if he's sharp and has his command dialed in. You guys kind of clued me in on him last year. I wasn't paying him any attention. But that was it was actually a pretty impressive finish, I thought, from him. And then, yeah, you know, I'm a huge Troy Melton fan. As far as I'm concerned, Melton's probably the second best raw arm in the system. You know, and I expect him to grow a lot this year. He's still really raw, still really only has pitched, you know, like three seasons, you know, basically like his junior and senior year college, and was just kind of figuring it out then, but has plenty of talent, pretty big breaking ball, spins everything really good. And then Jackson Jobe's just a dang monster. I am curious to see what, you know, Wilkill's been around so long, like you just start to forget him, but he's still got two good pitches. So I don't know, you know, and it's kind of hard to bet against the Tigers player development system at this point. As Wilkill, I think he's what, 24, maybe just about to turn 25. So, you know, this is probably kind of a do or die year for him, but I wouldn't be surprised if he turned into a, you know, a relief option or something like that, if they could just dial him in a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like he's been around forever. I remember when I was speculating on the rosters before the season, and I had him back in West Michigan. It was like, it would have been like his fifth season there, because he was there way back when it was low A. It's an interesting roster, because they only have four of our top 30 prospects, but it's like, you know, three of the most exciting arms. And then Hao Yu Lee, which was kind of shocking to me that he got promoted there. But, you know, there's been an infield crunch too. And, you know, they sent him to the AFL, so maybe it shouldn't have been that shocking. But yeah, that's going to be real tough for Eastern League hitters to get that Jobe, Madden, Melton trio on the weekend or whatever. You'd be like, oh, man.
It's going to be a long bus ride after that one.
And that's like, you know, we don't want to forget Lyle Lockhart, who, he was outstanding last year. Just tremendous. And he's a guy who is really, really speaks the pitch design language. Like, that was one of the things that when we talked to him, he was telling us like his exact, you know, VAA and IVB and all that stuff. We're like, oh, all right. So he's way into that, bought in, and he's a guy who's going to get the most out of
it. And I noticed Troy Melton was another one who, like, all of a sudden is like super conversant, you know? Yeah. Like, all these guys are really conversant and all that now. Whereas for years it was like, you know, they'd ask Matt Manning about his stuff and, you know, you could just tell, like, it was just like, you know, there was nothing there. No offense to Matt Manning, but it took a while until they really started getting through to guys and, you know, getting them educated to the point where they could explain themselves what they were trying to do, rather than just like, you know, they tell me to do this and so I do it. So, yeah.
But I don't want to speak for Raj here, but also, you know, I mentioned that they don't have a ton of our prospects, but there are a ton of veterans here. And actually, I forgot, I think Chris Myers has returned there. So that gives them five, right?
Yeah.
So, there's a ton of experience, a lot of veteran players there. It wouldn't shock me if they're winning a ton of games again, because those guys know how to play.
Yeah. At that level, that's a pretty deep group of players, even if the prospect's talent, it doesn't look all that great, you know. And, you know, they've got Troy Cruz, Melton and Myers are both fairly professional hitters for that level and have top and stuff. So, yeah, I could see it working out and them being pretty competitive, because that pitching staff should win them a lot of games as long as those three guys can stay healthy.
Yeah. I'm interested if they stay, and there's a couple guys too. There's Calvin Coker and Blair Calvo. Calvo that come in there. Joel
Paguero.
Paguero. Rice Tastin, who I thought, honestly forgot he was in the organization.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not trying to sound cruel. I just kind of right there. And then the Tigers are obsessed with Rockies players all of a sudden. They signed a guy by the name of PJ Pollan, who's a lefty, who will be, you can never have enough lefties. And the Tigers also signed a catcher. They really didn't do a big announcement about it, but they signed a catcher by the name of Stephen Scott, who was from the Boston organization. The system's got four or five guys that are just battling injuries right now. Mm-hmm. Alfonso's still recovering. Alonzo Rubicata is on the 60-day DL, so he's going to be out for a while. And then, this is, but what a big story that I'm actually looking forward to, and I'm going to try to ask, see if I can get a couple words from him, is Andrew Navigato, who comes back from a grade four shoulder separation on a really horrific injury last year against Bowie, where it was stupid.
Akron, I think.
I thought it was Bowie, wasn't it? No, I thought it was Bowie.
I thought it was Jose Tena of Akron. I thought it doesn't matter, really.
But, No, you're right. I'm sorry. I would have sworn it was somebody from Bowie for whatever reason, but you're probably right. That injury sucked. I mean, he was having a really good year. He was hitting about 280 with power, and he, talking to Greg and the staff and Gabe too, that he is a guy who's kind of like the leader of the clubhouse, and I thought that would really change the course of the season, but it just continued to step up a little bit. And among the infield group, we talked to Jay Colton, who we might have thought started the season Toledo, and I'm Gage Workman.
Yeah.
I mean, gentlemen, I want to believe that Gage Workman is going to be something, but it's just strange to see him back. Daniel Cabrera too, same thing.
Yeah. I mean, Workman is just so tantalizing for the Tools, but I mean, you know, he's kind of clinging to a thread this year. I don't know how much longer they'd keep him in the system, but I don't know. Plus speed and power is just hard to let go, man. Especially if you can hit left-handed.
And a good glove on the infield, right? Like it's everything but that hit tool. And it's and unfortunately, it's a 40% strikeout rate in his career in Double A, or like 38, 39. And it's, you know, you get that down to 30 even, and you've got yourself some hope. But it's tough to project there for him. But you know, you don't want to give up on a guy like that necessarily, because sometimes it does eventually click. It's just it's pretty rare.
Yeah, I mean, if he just turned into like Keston Hura but could play shortstop, he'd be like, fine, that's fine. Yeah. We'll take that all day. Yeah, you can strike out 35% of the time. We don't care.
If you're striking out 40% of the time in Double A, you're going to strike out about 60% of the time in the big leagues, unfortunately. So that's just got to get that down.
You know what's funny is that we have 666 watchers right now, so I do that number down.
Really?
Well, or up. Yeah, so we have a satanic number. TJ Hopkins takes over the Diego Reconis role of former San Francisco Giant outfielder for the Seawolves this year. Yeah. I wonder if that's going to be a continuing theme, if we're just going to have a former San Francisco Giant outfielder in the system.
I don't even think Hopkins was with the Giants for that long, wasn't he with the Reds? And then, the Giants picked him up. But yeah, it's you know, they're backfilling with some minor league veteran guys, and he was on the 40-man briefly, and now he's in Double A, and that's not the best sign. But you never know. Like, a guy like that, you go down there and produce, right? Like, that's the name of the game. You go down there, you play well, you hit, and suddenly you can put yourself back on the map.
Kind of feels like a little bit like the Giants thing is like, you know, I've got guys I can call and find out, like, is this guy going to be anyway? Like, if he's not, you know, we just want some of Bills, you know, and we have people we can ask about him and find out about his makeup, and we'll just go with him. That'll be fine. Maybe that's where the emphasis on that comes from a little bit. And then, you know, that'll wear off. You know, Harris doesn't know anything about the Giants now. We're not going to claim Joey Bart, are we?
No, we're just talking about, you know, what's funny is my brother asked me that earlier on a text, and I was like, why? I mean,
I can see him doing it, but yeah, I wouldn't expect it to go anywhere, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, I paid a ton.
Another catcher to like beat into shape just for fun.
I think we all paid a ton of attention to that 2018 draft because the Tigers had the first overall pick, and there was some thought, kind of a brief thought that, like, hey, maybe Joe Bart's the guy. You know, he sounds like a great team leader, and he had all that power, and there were concerns about the swing and miss and the hitting ability, and unfortunately those came true, and he was passed defensively by Patrick Bailey, and, you know, it's a tough break out there, man. But, you know, catchers stick around for a long time, so I'm sure he'll catch on somebody or somewhere, and maybe in the minors, maybe in the majors, but just probably not with Detroit because they've got a pretty good situation right now. Carson Kelly, 3-run bomb. And he's really maybe not all that different than Dylan Dingler, honestly. And
I don't need that.
Except for defensively. I mean, yeah, as a hitter. Yeah. So, and the Steven Scott thing, you know, like, you know, left-handed bat, seems like a pretty solid, you know, experienced catcher. I don't know if he's got the skills that AJ Hinch would ever, you know, let him catch for the Tigers. But you know, putting a left-handed bat down there and working with the guy is fine. You know, if Carson Kelly or Jake Rogers was a lefty masher, we'd be in great shape right now. We might be in pretty good shape anyway, though. It's not looking bad. Yeah.
But yeah, it was funny because I reached out to a couple people for if Steven Scott confirmed, because I have maybe one or two people in the org now I'll message, but I'm lucky if I get a response. Only I think it's just out of like I'm still relatively new to asking people for stuff, so I still have to figure that part out. But it was funny. I'm like, did you guys sign Steven Scott? Nothing. So I'm like, okay, well, apparently. And then I just waited to that. But the Tigers did sign another arm. Let's get to West Michigan. Another Dodger arm in the form of Connor was saying Austin Murr got traded to the Astros. I was feeling a little good for that confirmation. You guys see that?
He didn't. It was in the minor league transactions where it said Austin Murr, and it didn't even say traded. It said transferred or whatever to the FCL Astros. I think it was just a typo. I don't think it was anything. I think he's basically on the development list or whatever, the hot and ready list, I believe is Roger's calling it.
Somebody told me that that's what they're calling it, and that's what they're calling it eternally, the hot and ready list.
So
Brandon, you didn't hear that.
He was a guy I thought that might be there back in West Michigan again, but he's a valuable guy to have around, but apparently they don't feel like he needs priority development anymore.
Looking at the West Michigan roster, so they did sign again another former Dodger in the form of Carlos De Los Santos, who was pitching last year for Great Lakes. And again, when I saw the name, I'm like, I asked Chris, who the hell is this? Usually with Dodger prospects, you hear some sort of buzz on it, but he was pitching. He did pitch in the Dominican Winter League. Was also part of Ranch Cucamonga. Is it Ranch Cucamonga? Am I saying that right?
Rancho Cucamonga.
Rancho Cucamonga. Luckily for us, we have the ability to. This is what he would. Again, I only say this name because the rest of the staff were familiar with, but this name popped up out of nowhere. I just thought I wanted to check out what he was able to do, and I'm wondering if the Tigers found something where they're like, okay, we're going to identify this and just weaponize this guy, because this is one thing that the Tigers have been able to do the last couple of years is just take a pitcher and make him better. So we'll see. Oh, that's not bad. All right, that could work.
Fangraphs has 55 fastball, 55 slider on him. So
ooh,
definitely relief prospect.
Oh, there. I can see that slider there. All right. Sweet.
Yeah.
So that being said, I just wanted to kick off. Let's just kick off looking at West Michigan, who, by the way, I think have a better pitching staff than I think the team, like a lot of people will give them credit for. Let's start with the starting rotation. Carlos Pena, who led the Midwest League in ERA, comes back to lead the rotation. Dylan Smith, who I thought may have started in Erie, will be back at West Michigan, maybe because of a roster crunch. One of my favorite, you talk about you ride your prospect train. Brandon, mine's going to be the Jaden Ham tour.
Yeah,
I'm all about Jaden Ham. I'm telling you, I think I have a really, really good vibe.
Real Easter Ham.
Yep. Real Easter Ham about Jordan Ham. and then the rest of the rotation is a... This is where, I still think it's kind of...
Got Marcano.
Man, Marcano. Yeah, Carlos Marcano. Yeah, let's talk about him a little bit there.
Yeah, there's some projects there with the big sinker. Yeah,
Marcano is a guy that he is very young still. He was a starter in Lakeland 2 years ago as an 18-year-old, I believe.
He isn't turning 21 until July.
Yeah, I think we determined that he was the youngest pitcher in Lakeland, in low A at least, since Joel Zamaya, youngest to start a game down there. And yeah, he's a guy who gained a little velo last year. He's got three legitimate pitches and his athletic delivery. I may look forward to a bullpen future, but he's an intriguing young guy. I don't know. He's kind of physically maxed out, but then I thought Kyder Montero was kind of physically maxed out too. And then he found more velocity. And so, fun name to follow. And actually, I kind of like their bullpen. They've got some really fun arms in the bullpen. You got Marco Jimenez, who throws 100. You got Yosper Sanchez, who's kind of a deep under the radar guy that we saw a little bit in the FCL in Lakeland last year, who throws upper 90s with a pretty good hook. And you got Tanner Kohlhepp in there too, who's one of the more intriguing arms in the system with a two-seam fastball that's 2700 RPM.
Yeah. Yeah, tough arm angle, nasty, kind of slurvish slider. He just came back in the AFL.
He was, I think, in the second half of last season. I think he pitched
at the end of last year, too. So, and then, Colin Fields just has kind of weird numbers to me. I don't know if he's any good. I haven't really even seen him. I think I saw him pitch one time. But, has kind of this weird high spin cutter at 90, 91. Can spin a breaking ball, too. Might be a relief possibility there as well.
And Jerry pulled out, when we saw Max Alba was on the spring breakout roster, we're like, oh, that's interesting. And so Jerry dug into the numbers. And, there's some interesting stuff under the hood there, too. So, they could be a really fun bullpen down in West Michigan this year.
I'm really curious about Dylan Smith as well. We kind of mentioned him, but Dylan Smith, suddenly kind of was hitting 97, 98, not with any consistency, but he did throw pretty hard in the AFL compared to anything we'd seen from him before. And he does have a slider. So I haven't given up on him. I've still got him in the 20s, I think, on our list somewhere. So I'll be curious to see him as well.
Yeah. What's going to be, what I'm interested in seeing is a pretty stacked infield. I mean, you're talking about an infield here that has Max Anderson, in Abel Bastidas, who will be, I mean, that's an international guy who, and we looked at the Tigers let go quite a bit of international talent here in the last couple of weeks. We'll get that here in a second. Luke Gold, Peyton Graham, who when we had Ryan Garko on, he was discussing him making some strides. Looks like he's healthy. I always say Andrew Jenkins because I always say like Leroy Jenkins. Isaac Pacheco coming back. You have Carlos Mendoza and Danny Ceretti after spending some time in Erie last year.
Max Anderson too, right? Did you mention Max Anderson?
Max Anderson and Luke Gold, What's interesting is, for me at least, is looking at the fact that we're the versatility of putting, I mean, do you put Anderson at first? Do you put him at second? I mean, there's a lot of position versatility with this group.
Yeah, it seems like Gold's kind of settled in at second, but they still move him around. And I don't know if Graham is going to be like the everyday shortstop. I kind of assume so, but.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
You know, they may play with that a little bit, yeah. And then Pacheco obviously is going to play third mostly because I don't see him much else. Did he play first at all last year?
No, he actually played some shortstop last year.
He did. Well, yeah, I saw a couple, but I assume it was an injury or something. You know?
No, yeah, I don't. It was strange when they're having. You know, he's too big to do that. But in high A, you can get away with that still. Yeah. But yeah, I would imagine he'll play third base mostly. I think Anderson will play second and first. I think Gold will play second and third. I think it's getting late early for Bastidas. You know, he was kind of one of my picks for a breakout last year, and it didn't happen. And when you see a guy like this get, you know, after his performance get bumped up to high A, it's like he's getting the I don't know. There's any number of players who had this kind of treatment. Alvaro Gonzalez type of player who he's going to start one game a week and pinch hit and pinch run and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Just not much else going on there. What about Danny Ceretti just kind of doing it all, just doing whatever is required of him?
Yeah, yeah. I think he'll be second. He'll be short, third base, second base. Who knows? He's another. He like Josh Crouch, got the taste of double A and found it not to be terribly delicious.
Too spicy. Yep.
Yes. It's been tough for those guys up in double A. So veterans and good players, but it'll be interesting to see how the playing time shakes out there.
Yeah.
By the way, I totally forgot that Cole Turney. You guys remember Cole Turney at all?
He was the undrafted guy last year. He's like 25, 26.
Yeah. He'll be in the West Michigan outfield along with Roberto Campos and Steph Stevenson for new manager Tony
Capicilli, I think.
Well, didn't he, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't he with the organization last year in some capacity?
Was he in Toledo, a hitting coach in Toledo or something, or first base coach in Toledo? I don't know.
Yeah.
I have it here somewhere, but I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think he's got 3 C's, 2 L's, and 2 I's in his name. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. 2 P. Yeah.
Oh, 2 P's. P's. Yeah. It's a lot of double letters in that name.
Yeah. C A P P U C C I
L L I.
Yeah.
There's two of everything. We talked about Turney before because he had that really interesting story where he was at like 3 different schools and ended up in, I want to say, like a D3 school that Mark Connor's from. I think it's Mark Connor.
Yes. That's right. It was, what's that school? Cumberland?
Something like that. And he
Cumberland, you know, yeah.
He had one of those like absurd junior college like batting lines. It was like, you know, hit like .640 with 35 home runs or something like that. It was like, all right, settle down.
Wasn't Capicelli was the Tigers catching coach last year.
So he swapped roles with
Dianco is up now. Yeah.
Swap roles with Pena, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And Capicelli was, I think he just retired like a couple years ago. And I think the AAA Tacoma Rangers or Rainiers. Yeah. He was the manager of like right after he retired. So he's kind of done a few things already.
Yeah. It's a veteran. It's a veteran group down there. And they're bringing in another familiar face in Dan Rickaball, who was there last year, who did a really good job, very good coach. You look at West Michigan last year on paper, you kind of look at them and go, they were competitive. Like, we were kind of figuring out how they were able to stay competitive, but they were getting really good pitching towards the end of the season. And we saw, I mean, everybody pretty much ended up in Erie with the exception of Pena and Hernandez.
There were a lot of unfortunate promotions toward the end of the year for, it was good for the players, but it was kind of rough for the teams. You know, they Big B was raking and they sent him out of Erie, and Brady Allen was the huge part of West Michigan. They sent him to Erie that's life as a minor league manager, right? You have no control over your players really much.
Yeah, but not playing for your title, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. So, but in Roberto Campos,
Like Keiter Montero, AAA, your catcher all year, he's going up. Sorry.
Yeah, that's true. Montero went up 3 levels, like Bigby did. I was just mentioning Roberto Campos. Like, we haven't given up on him. He had a rough season last year, but for the first couple months, he looked really promising, and then it kind of went downhill. And so you hope that he can turn around. Still very young, so
yep, he knows what to do. Hit the damn ball in the air, kid. That's all you can do. You got to do that. So, yep. If the Tigers replaced their third base coach with a windmill, would anyone notice? Oh, Joey Cora already taking some fire.
The chat. It gets excitable. By the way, Joey Cora, it was early mornings in Lakeland watching him do the fielding drills.
With the bat.
Yeah, with the bat. Yeah. And it was just like, you know, you're sitting there and there'd be a couple times where it come right by the fence and Hitch would look over at us like,
we're all like. So the one thing we know about AJ Hinch is he's a bit of a control freak. At least with his assistants, you know, the coaches, they don't allowed to talk to anybody or whatever. And I think that Joey Cora is probably coaching third base the way AJ Hinch wants him to, which is to, you know, we're going to struggle to score runs at times this year. So just send everybody basically.
Yeah. Especially in that game, you know, I mean, he was only out by a hair, you know, he kind of had to push it. Nimmo is accurate, but he doesn't have like a big arm. The one the other day was horrific, but today that's standard practice in a close game. You just
push it,
you know, push it there. And hopefully they miss the throw. So.
Yeah. There was today was a good example of the cards just lined up right for the Tigers in that game. I mean, it really was. I mean, against Sean Manaea too. I don't know. The Tigers always do that against lefties for some strange reason. It's just like that random lefty will get him once in a while. I mean, yeah. Sean Manaea, when he's good, he is good. And
he's really keeping that front side closed a long time. Yeah. It looked like he had a lot more deception than he used to.
Yeah. I mean, he used to be like 91, 92.
And, but yeah, it went LOL Mets at the end. You know, they just kind of just puked up all over the place and just coughed that game up really.
So
it'll happen to us, I'm sure.
Well, no, and I mean, I'm sure the Tigers, I mean, everybody's saying 162-0, but we all know. But so as far as, let's go to Lakeland. Speaking of which, tomorrow we were recording a pod with Kevin McGonigal, fingers crossed, hopefully.
Oh, nice.
And so knock on wood on that. So hopefully that will be the case and it will kick off our interview series for the year. But the Flying Tigers pitching staff. So you look at the staff, it was kind of the same as last year where you go like, you look at it and you go, I mean, there's intriguing arms. I mean, out of all the, you know, you can sit there and look at it and go, well, who stands out? Who's the guy who would maybe might be, you know, it is going to see Rainer Castillo, who we were really high on last year and the year before. It seems like we've talked, not because of his last name, obviously, but, or maybe that was a little bit of it. But I mean, this is year four of him. This is his fourth year in the system. He's only 19 years old. So that's why I wanted to mention that. So yeah. he turns 20 in June, and this is year four for him. And we didn't really, this will be the first time that he is above rookie level. So,
there's a guy to watch for, yeah.
Yeah.
And
go ahead, Chris.
Well, we were just kind of mildly excited about him because he was one of the few times that they've actually spent money, like a decent amount of money on a pitcher. And he was a big bodied kid. And I remember finding video of him from like some perfect game events and stuff like that. And we could probably go and dig up some StatCast data from him last year, maybe, maybe not. Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see what happens there because, like, you know, like we're saying, big, big, strong kid. And,
The big arms aren't there. I mean, I guess that's like my first takeaway about Lakeland's, you know, rotation is that, you know, Paul Wilson, Blake Dickerson, Janik Diaz, those guys are going to be in extended spring training and doing the complex until they get there. So we're not going to be able to see those guys, but you know, you've got Donya Evans, Ham, and who else was there? Minton, like out of the draft class. So there's a few of the draftees there at least.
Minton,
a couple of them.
Minton and Sears, I think, right?
Oh yeah. Sears. Is there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's Chris and then Williams Bruce, as well. Thomas Bruce, who will, you know, an interesting little story. So
yeah. Jeff Ponce from Baseball America had, you know, tweeted that out. I don't know if it was today or yesterday. And our buddy Brian noticed it and I retweeted it. It was a big bodied guy who's throwing some nasty stuff down there. It could be interesting to watch.
It's a new era now where, you know, like guys from their training camps are just posting Rapsodo or, you know, or whatever Hawkeye or whatever data they're using and, you know, and just getting signed that way, you know, like, you know, you're just kind of auditioning online. And, you know, we've seen that a few times now, but he did look pretty impressive. You know, kind of a little bit along like the Drew Anderson line, although Bruce, I think, is like, yeah, he's 6'8". He's a big boy. So, you know, just continuing to pluck every guy you see out there that's interesting and not wasting roster spots as little as possible on guys that you're not going to develop that are just going to be org guys. And, you know, we've seen that process over the last few years, even under Avila and much more under Harris, where, you know, we'll just keep moving you out and finding guys that we can use. And, you know, we're not just going to have guys just hanging around here, you know, for 4 or 5 years in the upper minors being org guys. There's just going to be less of that. And they're going to keep trying to claim and pick up guys that they can work with and test out. So
he's just going out there just throwing gas. I mean, he does look, he kind of looks like Jason Foley from afar, mm-hmm. you know, with the hair. Oof.
Yeah. Better breaking ball though. Woof. Well, so, Foley's coming around. No.
This guy was pitching in Minnesota. He was pitching indie ball, right? Yeah. Was, yeah.
Frontier League.
Yes. You know what? Great reference there. Ninja Bees, Rod Beck here, former Rest in peace, Rob Beck, who one point lived in a trailer behind the minor league ballpark he was pitching at. That's how the legend of Rod Beck. I mean, this guy, whoa, that was a nice pitch too. Anyways, I could watch this guy pitch all day. And there's guys like that that'll be down in Lakeland. You know, we were talking about this earlier. Another arm too that's intriguing among that set as well is you mentioned just now, Brandon, and that was Dynvé Evans, who I'm looking forward to seeing him. Ulises Campos, who is going to be he starts the season on the IL, so hopefully you see him at some point. But you're talking about Yosbeer Sanchez, correct? I mean, you've talked about him a little bit before.
Isn't he in West Michigan, or is he in
He's starting the season in Lakeland.
I thought he was in West Michigan. I'm sorry. He was a guy that we randomly saw on the FCL, and it was like 97 to 99 with a pretty damn good curveball, like a sharp curveball, but some command issues, control issues. He's a guy that they got from another org. It was just an interesting arm, and you know, if he can throw strikes, that he can move quickly, based on what we saw in small glimpses. And I do think he got up to Lakeland at the end of last year, so maybe
he did
look up his data.
Yeah, he did. He jumped from Dominican to Complex League, and then the walks have been a problem, but there's a really good live arm to that with Sanchez. And you were talking about Luke Stoffel too, right? That was a guy who was a holdover from last year, I want to say.
I believe he was an undrafted free agent guy. Yeah.
He spent some time in West Michigan. He didn't get a lot of time, but the infield and catching, I mean, Jose Pesenio put himself on the map during the Futures game. And this is where I was talking about the injuries. Bennett Lee's out, Sergio Tapia out, injuries on the catching side. Eduardo Valencia, who is a guy who, another intriguing catcher, he's got to hit a little bit more, but he's put himself out there. And it looks like Clayton Campbell's going to be moving to the infield now versus seeing any time behind the plate like we saw last year. There's Christian Santana. This is a make or break year for him, guys. I'm sorry, I don't want to sound like I'm being drastic when I say that, but I think it is a make or break year for Christian Santana.
No, I definitely. I would agree. He's still, you know, he's obviously still young, but the you know, it was just such a brutal year last year. I thought he was a lot better, you know, late in the season. It looked like he had kind of started to tame down some of the swing issues, driving the ball a little bit more. But discipline and tons of pop ups is not the way to make a living, young man, especially if you're not a center fielder or a shortstop. So things have got to turn around there. You know, I love him. I kind of want to hang in there and give him another 2 years if it takes. But you're probably right that if it doesn't start happening, you know, much faster this season, that's probably not going to work out for him. Was McGonigal on this list, Joe? Because I swear I looked at it and he wasn't there. And I was like, oh, he and Clark are both in the complex leagues. It's nonsense.
they're both
I feel better. I was just like, what's going on? But this is a couple days ago.
You got McGonigal, you got Santana, you got David Smith from last year, Jim Jarvis, a lot of infielders taken last year. You also have Samuel Heal, who was an interesting kind of I've always compared him to like Sergio Alcantara. I think he's a glove first guy who can hit a little bit, just not much power. But it'll be interesting that like Santana's the old man there now. He's going to be mentoring Briseño and Clark and McGonigal. there's a lot of potential.
All those guys. The veteran shortstop.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know. It'll be fun, and we're going to be able to see those games. Not quite sure what kind of broadcast angles we're going to get. We're hoping it's the same one as the spring breakout, because that at least gave us the behind the pitcher mound, you know, view. Yeah. I have a feeling maybe it's just going to be the one from the press box, but that's better than nothing, right? It'll still give us a view of Max Clark's first home run.
Yeah, and Lakeland has a play-by-play guy too as well. We're supposed to be talking to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to recontact
him. Guess right now, when does McGonigal move up to West Michigan? Were you guys surprised that he was still in Lakeland? Because I kind of thought he might be the one that they're just like, all right, you're good. You can handle it.
I think if he was healthy, I think he would have been there.
Yeah.
I think they'll do the traditional. And we talked about this with people complaining about Max Clark being in low A. That's just what happens with high school players the year after they get drafted, like almost every time. And if they're really good, they move up quickly. You know, Holiday moved up in like 2 weeks last year. I don't think McGonigal's going to do that, but it wouldn't shock me if he's one of those dudes who's up by their all-star break, right?
Like June. And the Tigers have revamped this entire complex down there. They've got the whole shebang working down there. They're going to put everyone through the crash course at Lakeland in their first full season, at least for a while. So yeah, everyone can probably just get used to that. But you would hope that they'll move quickly.
Yeah, and Connor brings up a good point too. A lot of cold, especially the cold weather bats.
Yeah, I mean, right. Cold weather high school bat. Yeah, you don't really want to just dump them up there.
And
they got all the bells and whistles down there now. They spent all this fancy money on all this fancy stuff. You know, can't just send these guys out to West Michigan in the middle of nowhere.
So we got a question from Deadly Ninja Bees, and I really like this question. You guys have covered the system for a while. How do you feel about the system as a whole? Brandon, take it away while I go get a ginger ale real quick.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you guys are more in depth than I have, but maybe I've been doing it longer. I have to like kind of block out the early years because it was an absolute wasteland and almost anything felt good. You know, like those years from like 2018 to 2021, 22, it was like, oh, wow, this is great. There's, you know, prospects all over the place. But what you see now, like I was saying earlier, is that they're just doing an even better job as far as like just trimming out guys who aren't going to make it, picking up and claiming guys from all over, you know, keeping the tentacles out there and picking up as many guys as they can. So like the lower end of the system is stronger. And then there's just a lot more actual prospects. You know, we've talked a little bit about, at least you guys and I, behind the scenes, like, you know, West Michigan and Erie kind of have, you know, a little bit of weakness in the actual prospect department other than Erie's rotation. But you can see the next wave already starting when you get down to, you know, parts of West Michigan and Lakeland. And that's encouraging. I don't want to get too stoked because the Tigers took a lot of prep talent and managed to sign those guys doesn't mean that there's going to be this massive wave, you know, coming right after the one that we have at, you know, AAA and AA right now. But overall, I feel infinitely better. I mean, you know, I have tons of, like, almost too much confidence in their ability to develop pitching. And, you know, you just need a couple bats to keep developing. You know, obviously Clark McGonigal are kind of the two biggest guys, but, you know, Bryceno as well. You know, there's a few others out there, but overall I feel good. And I feel like they got that way in such a strange fashion where they had actually drafted more talent than it looked like. And then finally got development right, you know, found all these guys. And now, you know, maybe in the next year or so, we'll start to see like what the Harris side of things looks like as opposed to just like the Avila with the Garko, you know, cleanup and polish system that's gone on the last 2 years to suddenly turn out all these good players. So, I mean, I feel very confident the Tigers are going to churn out pitching now for a while to come, at least until like the whole paradigm changes and some team, you know, however, takes it to the next level. The Tigers should be developing plenty of pitching. You know, we still need to see what goes on positionally. I don't want to get crazy because Kerry Carpenter found a good hitting coach or, you know, swing coach or getting too excited about that. They're still going to need Max Clark, McGonigal, and those big guys to produce to kind of take this thing to the next level and have like a wave three. If we look at, you know, Spencer through Casey Mize as wave one, you know, the guys we have now, wave two. And then, you know, you're looking down in the lower minors and hoping that those guys will turn it around and that the Tigers something in the international free agent market. Hopefully Chris is really good. We got a nice prospect coming there, hopefully. So.
Yeah, next year. I mean, I would echo a lot of what Brandon said there. This is among the deepest systems for the Tigers I can ever remember. There's not necessarily a ton of like, you know, superstar talent. There are a few that really have that, right? And that's always going to carry the system. But like Brandon said, like, you look at Toledo, this is probably the best, like the most talented Toledo roster I can remember. Erie's pitching staff is really exciting. And then, yeah, there's a little bit of a, you know, you don't want to be mean, but like we said, there's not a ton of prospects there on the offense in Erie. And then it's a little bit iffy in the pitching in West Michigan and Lakeland, but you got really exciting infield prospects in both of those places. And arguably, like, and Brandon touched on this earlier, one of the most exciting position groups in the entire system is going to be that group of arms in the complex league, where you've got Paul Wilson, you've got Andrew Dunford, who was their 12th round pick last year. You got Blake Dickerson, you got Jenk Diaz, you got four of the giant young power arms. And that could be the next wave a couple of years down the road. These are the guys in Erie that are dominating. Now, you know, baseball's baseball. Some guys are going to get hurt. Some guys aren't going to work out. But the main other thing we've seen in the last couple of years is just a lot of guys getting better. And not everybody, right? There's always going to be some people taking steps back, but we've seen enough guys get better over the last 2 years to think that it's going to happen with some people this year too. So yeah, I'm excited about that. And I think the system's in a good spot.
And like you touched on earlier, going through Lakeland's list of pitchers, like, it's like guys you haven't heard of. Yeah. It's like guys you haven't heard of, but they all have data. You know, like there's no one where you look through their Statcast numbers and just think like, you know, what is this guy doing here? You know, there's a lot more guys that at least have one pitch, some attribute you can see developing. So it's just a lot more easy. It's just easier to see the plan, you know, coming to fruition and what they're trying to do. And the Tigers, I think another thing I like is that they haven't really gotten locked into like one type of guy. You know, for a long time, we talked about like the Astros and Rays, you know, up and down, wipe out breaking balls paradigm. The Tigers have never gotten locked into any one of those things. And most of the better teams are starting to get beyond that anyway. But there's just kind of a wide variety of guys, and they've had success with a lot of different types of pitchers at this point. So yeah, that leads to some confidence that that's going to continue to. Carson Rucker mentioned that. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, even, yeah, there is some bats in the complex league to get excited about. But as far as I look at the progress of the Tigers minor league system with a couple names that you're going to sit there and say, well, how does it translate? There's teams that are signing other former Tiger minor leaguers.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a stupid thing to analyze here, but let's rewind this back a little bit, okay?
Yeah.
Look at Jonathan Scope. He's in Mexico. Look at Daniel Lugo, starting to play baseball. There has been significant progress with the pitching development, enough to where, I mean, Oakland took a flyer on, I'm drawing a blank, all of a sudden on his name, and
Jack O'Loughlin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, to me, says something, because he was a guy who came out of nowhere. I mean, you remember last year, his descent, and he was starting the season at West Michigan, unassuming. I mean, he's back with the A's in the minor leagues, but I mean, his numbers in spring weren't great, but still, the point is, he's a guy who found his way on another roster, and that's starting to happen a little bit. You're starting to see guys that the Tigers have developed, and that there's a certain plan to it. The pitching is, there's a certain... Lockhart mentioned that everybody I talked to last year, Herder, learned a changeup.
Connor's point, got Mark Canna for Blake Holub. Blake Holub was like a 12th, 13th round two-way player from a Division II school, and they turned him into a really damn good reliever, and you traded him for a big leaguer.
Revis is down there handing out splitters, handing out cutters to people. You're seeing that come along. Yeah, Lachlan, you know, he didn't do anything for, you know, I mean, they signed him when he was 16, but he was just there for, you know, almost 6 years, and then all of a sudden he was throwing 94 a little bit, and the slider was a little better, and all of a sudden he's a guy as a lefty that other teams, you know, can see that they can use. The Tigers might actually have real 40-man roster decisions next year, and that's, you know, that's kind of like the marker of like, okay, this is a consistent, you know, development, not juggernaut, but, you know, a good system that is continuing to produce. So yeah, I think it's all very encouraging. I hope they pay Ryan Garko.
Give Ryan Garko whatever he wants. Give Ryan Garko whatever he wants. Give Gabe Rivas whatever he wants.
Robert Lund, give Robert Lund
like a lifetime contract. Leave him like some sort of stock or something in Little Caesars or something. Whatever you gotta do.
We could do NIL for pitching coaches.
Michael Berter, you need to do better. Come on.
The hitting coach. Well, I mean,
I'm gonna grab a drink. I'll be right back.
We even mentioned Andre Lipsius gets claimed by the Dodgers, you know, one of the strongest organizations in baseball, right? They don't hurt for developing prospects, and they found enough to like an Andre Lipsius. So yeah, things are moving up in that guard, and Brandon mentioned it. Yeah, like there are gonna be a lot of interesting 40-man decisions toward the end of this year. We counted, what did we count, like 8 guys who could potentially get added to the 40-man? And some of them have to be, and some of them don't. Like Jackson Job doesn't need to be, but they may. Same with Jace Young. They might just push their way up there. So
I mean, I look at it this way. I look at the development of Sawyer Gibson Long as an example. He comes over here with a K per nine at 8.78. He raised it by 2 and was in the major leagues last year. Think about that for a second. You did not, no one saw that coming. Nobody. They got it from Michael Fulmer. People were like, well, look at his numbers at Wichita Falls and blah, 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 blah. It was crap. He comes in here and he learns a pitch over the weekend, literally over the weekend. Becomes like this monster. Think about that for a second. That to me is a prime example of what the Tigers have been able to do. I feel like the Tigers farm system in terms of pitching, historically speaking, has been awful. Awful. I mean, we're talking, you look at you think about it this way. You look at the core of the group in the 70s, okay? Jack Morris, Dan Petrie, you have Dave Rosma. There's a couple other guys. Beyond that, going in the 80s, nothing. I mean, you're talking Kevin Ritz. What? You're talking Scott Alter. You're talking guys, all-time bad guys, Chris.
Yeah.
And they developed nobody. I mean, no offense to those guys out there.
Yeah, I mean, you had Justin Thompson, right? And then Jeff Weaver, and then Verlander.
That's it.
And Zamaya.
That is it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and Porcello. And
yeah, I mean, but it was like, again, it was few and far between, comparatively speaking, to teams. Like, you think about, like, you look at, like, the pitching development teams. Like, for example, like the Dodgers. You can go back to, you could trace the Dodgers back from the 70s. Even the Pirates, to a certain extent. The effing Pirates were able to develop pitching, like, at points. You know, and even the Royals in the 90s with Kevin Apier, and there's a couple other guys like Mark Grusia. There's a couple guys like Brett Saberhagen. There's another examples of that. The Tigers, for all my teenage years, all my kids' life. Ooh, nice. That's a nice choice.
Just prepping Michigan.
All right, nice. Yeah, it's good. Good choice.
I missed it.
You had a Founders Solid Gold there.
Oh, nice.
It's a good beer. I haven't had one of those in a while. But the Tigers, historically speaking, have been bad. So from my perspective, to see the farm system develop pitching talent, the way they have been, and it maximizes, is revolutionary to me. I know it sounds really weird to say that, but I've never, like, it's, I mean, I think about the 1996 team in my head. I watched a lot of bad baseball, That team was awful. Now, one guy, I mean, you're talking, give credit where credit's due. Randy Smith did whatever he could to get pitching. And they were searching all over. They got Masao Kita, their first attempt at a Japanese pitcher. And then they tried to get Nomo, and then they were too cheap to send him another year. Another time, another day for that story. Anyway.
Well, here's the one. I mean, this is the one that just kills me, is Justin Verlander. I mean, these fuckers had him throwing a two-seam fastball, and they were begging him for more arm-side runs. For years. I mean, that went on for a couple of years. Like, who knows how much greater Justin Verlander could have even been if they'd just been like, no, just pitch like Nolan Ryan, just four seams, over the top curveball, don't do anything else. Just
the Tigers development machine pitching wise was really, I don't even want to mention, but on the hitting side, real quick, I'm still concerned about the offense a little bit. I am a little bit, because while it is nice to see progress from Young, you know, Malloy, you still have a lot of square pegs and round holes in terms of positional wise, because you don't really have a true shortstop right now in their system. I mean, you sort of do, but I mean, you're not talking guys who are exactly gonna move. I mean, Kevin McGonigal is a guy that you can get excited for, no doubt. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Don't get it twisted. I mean, it was good to see a guy like Luke Gold, but I still think, unfortunately, the Tigers still have that label of 4A when it comes to a lot of these infielders. Because I mean, Eddie Leonard is great pickup, but it has to be done on a major league. I have to see a guy at least for one or two seasons before I can believe in the hitting of this, them developing hitting. I mean, Kerry Carpenter is a great story, but you mentioned earlier, Brandon.
Well, they picked him up, and he's one of their best infielders right off the bat. You know. they don't have that many others.
Yeah, it's just, but as far as like Cole Keith's like that, the first outlier of like, well, they identify the talent and then they realize like what the guy who was like born to play baseball. That's all he thinks about. Talking to his mother, there's a contract, but like his mom, fantastic. Mary's such a fantastic lady, but she was just like, look, this kid was gonna play baseball no matter what. That's, you know, he's like, fuck college. You're like, nah, I'm not doing that shit. No way. I'm not doing that. I like
the line. Yeah. If I can get A's and play an hour less baseball, or I can get B's and C's and play an hour more baseball, and I want to play more baseball. It's cut and dried. You know, I could do what I wanted, so I'm going to do this.
God bless that, man. Seriously. Yeah. Like, just, you know, that's the way I was. Yeah.
I mean, the one development story, I mean, other than Kerry Carpenter kind of and Big B kind of being magical, is Parker Meadows. They really worked on his swing, really worked on shortening him up and cleaning up his hand path and got him there. But I mean, I have to agree overall that's still the side where I feel like I don't have tons of confidence, and maybe they don't need that much. You know, maybe they can trade pitching. Maybe you package Madden and Malloy and actually get an infielder. You know, something like that's got to happen. Scott Harris is going to have to kind of sort those pieces that don't fit the holes that they're shaped for along those lines. But at very least, the pitching is golden, and the hitting is at least somewhat better. Like, we're seeing, you know, they look confident at very least.
Yeah, I mean, this is the one area, the bats, where I wonder if we're going to see that come through now with their own drafting strategy. You know, last year was their first real draft that they got to do themselves, this front office. And pitching is different, right? Like, the pitching is so advanced now, and you got all these machines that can help you. You can identify interesting traits, because there's a baseline of pitching talent you need to pitch professionally. Yeah. And all these guys are throwing, you know, 95 plus, basically.
And you don't have to react as a pitch. I can put them and you throw.
They may just have completely different metrics that they're looking at and things that they, like we talked about last year, they really seemed to target guys who hit. Like, they were really like, mm-hmm. let's just get these guys who could hit. And that may be the way they go forward, and that we may start to see some of that coming. But, you know, it's, I don't know. I think it's harder to develop hitting in general, honestly. So I think it's a slightly more innate thing. It'll be very interesting to see what they do with that this year, if some guys can take steps forward.
Yeah. And you can't test it. You know, you can't test it the way you can with pitching. You know, you can only see if a guy can hit major league pitching when he's facing at least AAA pitching, if not major league pitching. You know, you can put Jackson Jobe, you know, out there against 18-year-olds and he'll be throwing strikes and you can see the metrics and you know he's a goddamn monster. There isn't that, you know, it's much more cut and dried, you know. Like, obviously he has to learn how to pitch with runners on base and traffic and, you know, in and out of the stretch. There's plenty of things to learn, but it's not proactive, it's not reactive. Hitting is all reactive. So
no, you're right. I mean, I didn't really think about the aspect of hitting an object that's coming at you with movement and 99 and all the sorts of stuff is insane. I mean, it's you take it for granted, but even now the Tigers are going with high school hitters, which is something that they failed on in the past. Outside of Nick Castellanos, I mean, look at Derek Hill.
Yeah, Riley Green's all right, but I mean, but you know, I know what you're saying. They just didn't they didn't really go after high school hitters that often. And you could see like hitting so hard, right? Like the best hitters on the Tigers right now are all out of sorts. Like Green's hitting everything into the ground, Torque's hitting everything sky high. Keith hasn't. We expect Keith to pick it up after a few weeks, right? Or maybe a month or two. We talk about how he usually takes a little while to adjust, but all these guys are going to turn it on eventually. But hitting so damn hard, I don't know. But that is something to watch. I think, Roger, I think you're right that it is the
You see a guy like Oscar for 2 years and falls apart. You know, it's inexplicable.
Yeah. So getting some more hitters will help.
Yeah. And if we're trading pitching for hitting, I'm good with that. If that's the way this works out, that's fine.
Yep. No, I'm Job, cool.
You keep your Jackson Job and probably Troy Melton too, unless somebody really overpays for him.
Like the Georgia satellites want saying, keep your hands to your damn self on that. So I made a ladies and gentlemen, it's 11:18 on a Monday evening, April 1st, and I made a Georgia satellites reference. So if anybody out there who's watching who gets who the Georgia satellites were, congratulations. Give yourself a Barry Horowitz hat on the back. Because I'm even one more obscure on that reference. So that being said, we are going to. So like I said, we have a story coming out tomorrow with Zeke Jennings breaking out West Michigan. I'll be doing a recap of what the Erie Seawolves look like. And we'll be out there Wednesday for media day, both at West Michigan and Erie. Should be blast. And trying to think. So Friday kicks off the season. So it's going to be like I said, our coverage is getting better and better. Shout out to Colin for coming out there on Saturday. He randomly said, hey, I'm going to the game. Do I pick up my media pass? And sure. And he went out there and he had less of a problem finding a seat than we did, because everywhere we sat for Friday,
I think they said there was 12,800 people there in Toledo, and I don't think we'll run into that issue again. But yeah, sometimes when you want to get video from behind home plate, it's a little bit tough on opening day.
Yeah, I'm complaining because I don't understand why people move so much during the game.
Also, when they don't show up till like the fourth inning, you're comfortable. You're like, what?
We all did this to ourselves by pushing that Toledo is going to be the team to watch. You know, like it's going to be a good time. There's all these players to watch. You know, it's going to be a party down there. Tony Pacos is packed and whatever else goes on down there. So,
you know what? Don't sleep on the Spaghetti Warehouse, man. I'm telling you, I like the Spaghetti Warehouse. That place is underratedly good. I mean, I know people like Tony Pacos pickles quite a bit, and that's a thing that people will buy jars of. But it's Kitty Corner of the Spaghetti Warehouse. But don't sleep on the Spaghetti Warehouse. They have some fantastic food there. It's it looks weird from the outside, but I think that's the aesthetic is what people draw to. But they have Chris, the Frogtown Nachos? What was it? The
new Yeah, we were the first people to get. Don't tell Mark, he'll be horrified by our. He, for whatever reason, he hates that I like liquid cheese. Maybe because it's not a real item. But it's a new thing on the Mud Hens menu this year is these Frogtown Nachos, which are just big fat nachos with all the fixings. And we were apparently the first two people to ever order them. So,
I don't have any problem with the liquid cheese. I just need real looking meat, like not burger. Yeah. I need like some steak or pork or something in there.
Yeah, we had chicken on it, right?
Oh yeah.
And they came. The woman came and talked to us while we were sitting down to make sure that they were good. Like they didn't know if they were doing it right. So,
and I give her some critique. I'm like, oh, you could have spread out the toppings better. I'm like, such a dick. You could have spread the toppings more on the nachos themselves, and like a fat dude, like
we're evaluators. That's what we
evaluate. She's like looking at you like, am I being profiled? Why do I have to be the nacho expert? We're the business here. What am I doing?
Yeah, what the hell? So, yeah,
if we really want to start a debate, we could go to this power can be taught, hitting instincts cannot. That'd be a fun debate topic. I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, Connor's trying to start a fight here.
Yeah. I think that's probably more true than that, but you still have to have the snap. And there's a lot of guys that they've tried to teach to hit the ball harder and develop bat speed, and they can't do it. So it's tricky.
Well, Esther Ruiz is back in AAA.
Yeah, exactly. It's just you get the roller, you build the forearms, you'd be fine. But you can't do it. Some guys just can't.
So the Tigers tomorrow at 7:00, Casey Mize against Adrian Hauser. And then the series ends on Wednesday with Tarik Skubal against Jose Quintana. And the opening day is Friday. So I'll be out there for opening day. So a lot of baseball to get to this week. And thanks so much for listening. And again, if you like to donate, please donate. There's a Bitly, there's gonna be rain tomorrow. So by the way, it will be nice because with the uniforms as crappy quality as they are, I'd rather not. not deal with that because Fanatics, man, screw you.
I know, man. It's so bad. The Yankees ones the other day were just horrific. Like Carlos Rodon, you know, looked like it was just going to just melt right off of him, you know. And I'll have the guest bedroom cleaned up for you guys next time, too. It'll look better.
Oh, sweet. Today. Yeah.
I'm just looking at the background like, oh yeah, well yeah, I just wandered in here. I was like, oh, that's a podcast, man, whatever.
I've never cleaned up my background in like 4 years, so
it's yeah, I got my brother's bobble now. My brother's got a big head back there, and so now yeah, I was pulling video from John earlier, I realized like I've changed my background like 800 times, and now there's like random Transformers back there. There's still baseball books back there. And Connor, also want to mention that the Saginaw Valley, the Cardinals, will take on Wayne State Friday through Tuesday. So that's actually, and that's a good call. Both outstanding baseball programs. Wayne State has produced some major league talent. Same thing with Saginaw Valley, the mid cities, if you Tri-Cities. Yeah. Saginaw Valley or Saginaw, Flint, and Bay City.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, Tri-Cities. Maybe Midland. I don't know.
I'm not. I don't know. Yeah, I don't. Brandon, it's your neck of the woods. I mean, it used to be your neck of the woods, right?
No, I'm mostly a Kalamazoo, Southeast Michigan guy. I mean, I drive through there on the way up north, but you know.
I was gonna say,
Bay City and Saginaw do seem to get kind of lumped together, so maybe they do mean Midland. I'm not
okay because I know you, yeah, because we were at Western Michigan for a while, right? You were in West Michigan or like the Kalamazoo area, that's right.
Yeah, I lived in Kalamazoo for like 12 years from the mid 90s until 08 or so. Yeah,
during your band days, right?
Side, but like, everything else, I'm just passing through. Going to Western creative writing,
yeah.
I mean, a little bit now, mostly I just supported friends. I was never very good. Look at these baby fingers. Like, it just wasn't going to happen to me.
I've got the same issue.
I got Lou Reed's fingers, but they're even shorter. Yeah.
I got short, stubby.
The hand size. It's weird. The palm size is fine, but the fingers are short. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. My wife has these incredible, long, tapered fingers.
My dad was a smoker.
If we can get Harrison these fingers, maybe he can pitch. And I think he has them. So,
I looked it up.
Yeah, I looked it up. The Tri-Cities in Michigan refers to two regions.
Oh.
One is Saginaw, Midland, and Bay City. And the other is Grand Haven, Ferrisburg, and Spring Lake.
Okay.
Never heard of it.
I have no idea what that is.
I've been to Grand Haven, but yeah.
Yeah, Grand Haven's a cool town.
Yeah, it's west side of state. Okay, so we're doing a geography podcast here, ladies and gentlemen.
We learned something in here, gentlemen. I did.
Chris, if we're doing the drinking game, if you're doing the Motor City Metrics drinking game.
That's right. You got to drink six times there.
Yeah. Oh, God. Chris, mentioned a city name there.
Every time I mention a city in Michigan, apparently. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you
Brandon's
so much.
Doing it. Good job.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, Brandon is.
All right. Let's go.
Let's do this. So week two, we'll be back next Monday recapping a full system of baseball. And we look forward to talking to you then. For myself, Chris Brown, and Brandon Day. And by the way, congratulations to Kurt Mez. Kurt, who is now back in the editing game. He is now the chief editor-in-chief at Motor City Bengals.
I didn't hear that.
We'll have to talk about that after we're off the air. Talk to you soon, everybody. Have a good night.
All right. Good night, guys.